And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Jen M. from Encinitas.
Hi, I'm Jen and I'm an alcoholic. Yes. I'm so happy to be here tonight. Thank you, Sam, for asking me. I don't know where you are, but thank you. Oh, there you are. I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome all the newcomers. If you're new here tonight, you might think that it's really weird that I'm like super happy to be sober and that I love AA. Just wait. Don't quit before the miracle happens. That's what they used to say in my home group. And it's unbelievable. Like, things will happen that you would never have even planned and that you would have never expected to happen. I have a life that is nothing that I would have thought that it would have been, and I love my sober life today. I really love my sober life today. It's not perfect. There are things that I would change, but I know deep to the depths of my being that I'm alcoholic and that I can't live like a normal person in this world without Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that everything good in my life today is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so, so grateful for that. So if you're new tonight, welcome. Congratulations to the token taker. And Jen, thank you so much for sharing tonight. You know, this is why we keep coming back, right? So my sobriety date is November 3rd, 1991, and I got sober when I was 17, so I'm 45 now, so I'm middle-aged. One of my old-timers in my home group loves to remind me that I'm middle-aged now because he's known me since I was 19, and so it's funny. he thinks it's funny. But you know, sometimes people in the outside world don't really understand why we keep coming back. Like, we know, like, my head doesn't get uncrazy on its own, right? And it doesn't stay uncrazy unless I'm current in my program. Like that, I just need that. I'm that type of alcoholic. It's not just about my drinking. We were talking about this on the way down here, how it's so much about our twisted thinking too. You know, it's like we have that allergy of the body. We have that phenomenon of craving that sits in. When I start to drink, I want more no matter what's going on. I have to have more. It doesn't matter what I think at the outset of my drinking, once alcohol hits my system, I want to have more, and I have to have more. Normies don't really get that because they don't have that. They just have never experienced that, and they just can't understand what that experience is like. So they ask, like, well, why do you still go to AA, you know? And when I go to AA, when I keep showing up, I get to see miracles like Jen. And I got to see Jen's story, and where she stands today, and the experience that she's having in Alcoholics Anonymous is an absolute miracle. And, you know, if I don't show up to meetings, I don't get to see that stuff, you know. I may not need a meeting every single day to stay sober that particular day, but I don't know what I'm gonna see when I go to the meetings. And when I go to my home group, it happens a lot where I get to see people that I've known for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden one day you just see the light turn on, you know, like you just see them get it, and then all of a sudden things are starting to change, and they're starting to smile, and they're starting to just have a really good life, and it's just, I just don't want to miss that, you know. I just, that fills me up in a way that alcohol never could. You know, I was a weird kid, you know. We were talking about on the way down how we all needed a drink back in preschool, and I never felt like I fit anywhere, and I clearly remember being depressed and not feeling a part of in my preschool class, you know, and just having like weird, you know, ideas about the world and weird feelings, and I just never felt right, and I just never felt like I fit. And, you know, the best way that, like, I can describe it for myself, it's like I was cosmically misplaced. I was like in the wrong solar system, on the wrong planet, in the wrong century, you know. I just never felt like I was in the right place. And I just didn't get what was going on around me and how to make friends. And, you know, I had a few friends, and, you know, I'd get that friend, and I'd take that friend hostage, you know, as we do. And, you know, and I just never felt comfortable in my skin. And And that was how my alcoholism manifested before I ever took a drink, you know. And what happened for me is when I took a drink, I didn't have to feel that way anymore. I felt like I could be the person that I thought that I wanted to be. I thought I could be fun and be the party girl. And I was just a mess. I was just a mess. And it was just gross. And, you know, I got here at 17. And, you know, but back in... I did weird things, like I tried to choke this girl in ballet class when I was 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old. Got kicked out of my ballet class. My mom was so mad. And I didn't get to get my lollipop at the end of the day. And I was mad that I didn't get my lollipop, you know. And like, never mind that I like traumatized this other little girl. So, you know, I did weird stuff like that. I was full of anger. I was full of fear. I was mostly angry when I was little. Like, I was just like this angry kid and crazy. I just felt crazy. And as I got older, I just really started to think I was crazy, and I started to develop panic attacks by the time I was 9 years old. And I started, and I lived with my grandparents, and my parents were divorced. And this is in the 1970s and 80s back on Long Island. And if anybody's from back there, like, it wasn't like that. Like, it wasn't how it is now. Like, it's not uncommon for people to have divorced parents. Well, in my neighborhood, it was like I was the only person who had divorced parents, and I was the only one who lived with their grandparents. And on top of already being alcoholic and feeling different, because what I know after being in AA a long time is that we all feel the same way. And like Jen said, it doesn't matter what our circumstances are. We all have these same feelings inside, and that's what kind of connects us and makes us all belong here. But I felt like that was why I felt so different, you know. And there was a lot of abuse going on in my family, and just a lot of bad stuff. My mom left when I was six, and so, you know, I just had a lot of things going on that made me feel different, feel uncomfortable, feel not a part of. And when I drank, alcohol took away all of those feelings. And I had my first drunk when I was 12 years old. And my son is 12 years old now, so that's scary. I'm like looking at him, I'm like, is he? No, I know he's not yet, but you know, no, but I don't know. There's those kids, and you know, and you just look at the friends and like, is that the one he's gonna drink with? I know who it's gonna be. I know. I already know. You know, but. So we just cross our fingers and hope he doesn't have the gene. But anyways, I was his age. I was 12. And when I had my first drunk, it was at a sleepover party. You know, and I was the one who, you know, we were at, like, this friend's house. And they had, like, this little, like, apartment off to the side that wasn't being rented at the time. So we got to have this little slumber party and a bunch of girls. And we snuck into the kitchen and found scotch. You know, there's a big bottle of scotch in the kitchen. And I was the one that wanted to keep going back. Let's keep going back for more and more and more. And I ended up throwing up. And really, like, I really thought that was just a part of drinking. I didn't know that was, like, normal people don't, like, just, like, continue to, like, drink like that and throw up every time they drink. You know, my mom, years later, after I got sober, said, and my grandmother had the same story. They're not alcoholic, and they both had said that they got drunk like that one time and threw up and never did that again, you know? And that's, like, what normies do, I guess, you know? They're like, they have that experience, and they're like, oh, I didn't like that, and that was... I would do anything to have that feeling that alcohol gave me. You know, alcohol treated my alcoholism. And the only other treatment for my alcoholism that works better than alcohol is Alcoholics Anonymous for me. And everything that I've done in AA, everything that I've been asked to do in AA has treated that alcoholism a little bit more and a little bit more. And, you know, it's like, to me, it's an absolute miracle that I can, like, show up to the parent council meeting on a Thursday morning, you know, that I can, like, be in the world, that I can have a job, that I, you know, all the things that I get to do today, I truly believe is a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not only just being sober, not only getting to be sober, but also just being able to be comfortable in the world around the earth people. And I'm not like the other Catholic school moms. Like, my son and I even had this conversation this afternoon that, like, I'm not like the other moms. He's like, no, you know. And it's okay. And you know what? Today, I'm really okay with that. You know, I know I'm a little different. I'm a little off. but I can just go along, you know, and do, you know, I do the same thing in the out in the world that I learned in AA. When I'm uncomfortable, I go and I be of service, or I go and talk to one of the new moms and see how they're doing and if they have any questions about the school, or, you know, it's the same thing at work. Like, I go and talk to the new people, or I go and see what I can do to be helpful. And I learned all of that in here, and that gives me that level of comfort that I sought in drinking. I don't know why it works, but it just works for alcoholics. So I continued to drink, and I continued to do things that through junior high that I was ashamed of, you know. And by the time I was 13, I was swearing off forever. And what I realized after I got sober was that another thing that, like, normal people aren't doing is at 13, they're not swearing off alcohol forever. They're not getting themselves into situations where they're, you know, drinking so much and doing shameful things that they're like, I've got to quit drinking, right? Like, that's not normal 13-year-old behavior, right? And so I would stop for a little bit, and then, like, I'd start drinking again, because at some point I need that relief. I have to have that relief again, because I can't live in the world without it. You know, I can go for periods of time, but I at some point have to have that relief again. And so I continued to drink, and by the time I was 16, I was failing out of high school, and I had started smoking pot, and that became an everyday thing, and drinking had become an everyday thing. Like, it was like this summer before 11th grade, I was drinking every day, and then I started smoking pot, and then that was easier to get than alcohol. You know how it is. And so that became an everyday thing. And then by the time I was the middle of 11th grade, I was not going to school anymore. And, you know, looking back, I was not a kid who was, like, good at, like, sports or music or, you know, like, anything like that. I was good at school. I was one of those alcoholics with potential. I test well, you know, but I was never living up to my potential. And I would, you know, do good in school for a while, and then I wouldn't, you know. And by this time, I had had this dream of going to Berkeley. That was my one dream in life, that I really wanted to go to Berkeley. And I thought, you know, I was smart enough potentially to do that, but by the middle of 11th grade, it was like I was barely, you know, going to make it out of high school. I wouldn't have made it out of high school if I hadn't gotten sober when I did. And, you know, and then my family's mad at me, and my friends are mad at me, and, you know, and when I got here, you know, I heard a lot of people. I was, again, 17 years old. I hear people talking about losing houses and losing families and losing jobs and all of that, and I'm like, well, maybe I'm not really alcoholic because all of this stuff hasn't happened. But looking back, I know that I was losing or had lost everything that was important to me as a 17-year-old girl. And that was, you know, that was just where my alcoholism took me. I was losing everything already by then that meant something to me. And so I ended up in rehab. I went to San Luis Rey Hospital up in Encinitas, and I didn't think I was alcoholic at that time. I thought I just couldn't quit smoking pot. I didn't know. I didn't understand the whole disease of alcoholism. But, you know, you take away the alcohol and I get even crazier. And the first time I ever heard Clancy speak, he was the first person the first speaker I ever heard that addressed this, that, you know, he talks about how he would say, you don't understand, when I stop drinking, things get worse. And when I stop drinking, I get more depressed and more anxious, and I don't know how to live in the world, and I just can't take it anymore, and I want to die. And what happens is that when I don't drink, but I don't work steps, I don't have any tools for living. And so for the first 3 years of my sobriety, so I got sober at 16 initially. I went back out because I wasn't doing the steps. I wasn't calling a sponsor. I would get a sponsor, but then I was too afraid to call her because I was terrified of people. And the only thing that took away that fear of people was drinking. So I would, like, get sponsors at the meeting and then I would, like, be afraid to call because I didn't know what to say, and I just didn't get, like, what we do here, right? So I would, like, not call them, and then I'd feel bad because I didn't call, and then I'd feel stupid, and then I just would never call. And then eventually I drank. After 90 days, I drank. And I had a resentment against somebody at a meeting, and, you know, and I was not doing anything I was supposed to be doing. So going to 2 meetings a week. So that was that. And I went back out, and I can't tell you what happened. Like, I really have, like, very little memory of what happened from, I don't know, I think it was, like, April of that year to November 1st or November 3rd when I got sober. But I do know that the night before, the last night Before I got sober, it was probably one of the worst nights of my life. I was camping with friends. I had been trying to stay sober. I had started going back to meetings. I had started talking to some people that I had known previously and thinking about getting sober again and kind of wanting to get sober again, but not, you know, like just not knowing. And I was on this camping trip and with friends and a boyfriend, and things went really, really bad. And my friends thought that my boyfriend was going to try to kill me. And so they had to sleep, you know, two had to sleep on either side of me because they thought he was going to come back and kill me. And it was really scary, and it was just kind of the culmination of everything. It was the people and the things I was doing and the selfishness and the self-centeredness that we do and, you know, all of that. We step on other people's toes and all of that kind of stuff. That it was just a culmination of everything that I had been living in my drinking and using. And I look back on that night, and that's all I need to look at and go, I never want to have to live like that again. I never want to have to be that person again. I never want to have to live in that world ever again. And, you know, it's really hard when you're, you know, when you're new and you're uncomfortable and you don't know what to do. You don't know what to do with yourself and how to think, and if you're not taking direction, you know, it's you just don't know. And I got in a lot of pain not working the program, but I did get sober, and I stayed sober, and I started going back to meetings, and I went back to talk to my old counselor from rehab, and who is still a really close friend of mine today, and he's like a dad. I do not have a relationship with my dad today. I've done some amends around that, and that's okay. But I have these amazing men in my life who are like surrogate dads, and I have like more than one of them. And so it's like that's one of the miracles of AA, that I get to have these people in my life that are like the family that I didn't have, you know. And I've had the opportunity to be raised by them in AA. And so I stayed sober, and by the time I was 2 years sober, I was completely crazy, wanting to kill myself. And so I checked myself into a mental hospital down in Chula Vista because I thought I was going to kill myself. And I remember saying to my therapist at the time, I don't know why I'm sober. I don't think I was even going to meetings at all at this time. I'm like, I don't know why I'm sober. This isn't working. I feel awful. And she said, can you really say that? Can you honestly say you've really tried the program? And I thought, no, I don't think I really can say that. I don't think I really have. But I really didn't kind of know what to do still. So I went to this mental hospital. It was a horrible experience. It was just awful because I'm like sober and they didn't have AA meetings there, and it was scary. I was like 18 and I don't know, or 19. I think 18 or 19. Anyways, it was just, I never want to have to go through that again either. So I had this friend, my friend Derek, and we had been friends for a year or two. He was a year less sober than me, so I guess about a year. And his sponsor was my old counselor from rehab, the one that I'm still close with. And my friend Derek was like this really like crazy, hyper, outgoing young person. You know, there was like this, you know, like this whole young people's thing at that time. And I was talking with David about it before the meeting. He was part of the old ACCUPA host committee in 94. And we were talking about that because we know the same people from that committee. And so my friend Derek, he was like doing young people stuff and going to lots of meetings. And, you know, and he was like, come on, let's go to this meeting. Let's go here. Let's go there. Let's go hang out with these people. And I would just kind of tag along with him. And I'm like terrified of people. And I don't know how to talk to people. I don't know how to say hello. I don't know how to say any, you know, like to respond. I don't know how to do anything in the world. And so I just followed Derek along, and he did all the, you know, he was just excited to be there wherever we were, whatever we were doing. And finally, at some point, he said to me one day, because he knew I was just miserable, and he said, you know, if I was as miserable as you, I would drink or I would kill myself. And it was just like, and if you, any of you know Derek, it was just like, it's just his way, and it was exactly what I needed to hear. Because I'm like this meek little, you know, like I'm scared, I'm meek, I'm like, I play this role, you know, being like this little girl. And what I really needed was people who were willing to tell me exactly how it was and exactly what I needed to hear, no matter if I got upset or scared or cried or what. And I finally ended up getting a sponsor who, you know, at some point, one of her things that she would say to me was, I don't care what you think, I don't care how you feel, I just care about what you do. And she really meant it. Like, she did not, and she didn't say it as nicely as that either. And so Derek and I went and talked to Nick, and I went to Nick, the old counselor, and I said, I need a sponsor who will kick my ass. And this is like the first like God moment, because I don't know where that thought came from. Like, I don't know how I knew that. And I said that to him, and he said, oh, I've got the perfect person for you. And he gave me this woman's phone number. And, you know, I'm still, like, terrified of people. I don't call my friends back. You know, I don't call people that I don't know. And somehow I got willing to call this woman, Carol. And somewhere, like, years later in my sobriety, I really, like, stopped to think about that moment, because that really, really changed my life. And since then, I've had a number of moments like this where it was like I could go this way or I could go that way, you know. And we get asked to do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And sometimes we're good about following through, and sometimes we're not. But you know, I was raised in the type of AA once I got there that you never say no to an AA request, and Jen talked about that too. So I got the willingness somehow to call this woman. And that was another, you know, just another God moment for me. Like, I don't know where that willingness came from, but for some reason I was finally open. I wanted my life to be different. I knew I didn't want to drink. I didn't really want to kill myself, but I did not and could not go on living the way that I was living. And so I called Carol, and she was an old biker who owned a bar up in San Marcos, and she was a tough lady, you know, she'd been to prison, and, you know, and she just barked at me, and she was like, all right, you're gonna meet me at this woman's meeting. And I'm like, oh, woman's meeting? I hate women. I don't want to hang out with women. I don't go to women's meetings. And she's like, but I didn't say this to her because she sounded really scary on the phone. So I was like, she was someone I'm not going to say no to. And that was exactly what I needed. Nick gave me the perfect person, you know? And I really believe that God puts these people in our life when we're ready. And when I look back at that and I think, like, what if I had not made that phone call? That one phone call that was like 5 minutes of my life, you know, that one moment. What if I had just decided, you know what, I'm too scared and I can't pick up the phone? I would not be sober today. I would not be standing here today. And I did it. And then from then on, I started to take direction, you know, and she started to give me direction. I mean, she didn't just give direction. She was like, demands, you know. It was like, this is what we're doing, and this is where we're going, and this is what you're gonna do, and that's how it was. And you know, it just worked for me. I don't know, you know, we're rebellious alcoholics, and you know, some of us need a more gentle AA, and some of us need like a drill sergeant, and that's what I needed. And you know, that kind of like really really strict, really structured AA worked for me. And it's not for everybody, but for a lot of us it is. And I'm so incredibly grateful for that and for strong sponsorship. And you know, she had a sponsor that had a sponsor that had a sponsor that all this trickled down from, you know, all the way to do the steps. And I mean, we just did the steps out of the book. We had a lot of customs in my home group back then, and there was just a certain way that you did things. I mean, even just tonight, like just dressing up, like you always wear a dress at the podium, and that's just a rule, you know. And just, I don't know, I just function good within these within these rules. So Carol was that type of sponsor, and we got busy, and it changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. It changed my sobriety. You know, she got me doing a lot of service work. She got me into a lot of meetings. I was like one meeting a week at that time, like one young people's meeting a week with Derek, you know, hanging out, and then doing some young people stuff. I don't know. And then she got me going to a woman's meeting, a big book study, a step study, speakers meetings, as Bill sees it meeting. And we, you know, I had to take commitments at like a lot of these meetings, and she got me into the steps. And what I had really struggled with for a lot of years was God. My dad, was Catholic, and he, took me and had me baptized behind my grandparents, my mom's back, when I was 5 years old. My mom had converted to Judaism. My grandparents were Lutheran. You know, I had this like weird, and like nobody like practiced any religion except for my dad, who happened to also be the sickest person in my family. So I kind of had like this really weird, like I had a lot of issues, especially with the Catholic Church, which a lot of us, you know, I mean, that's so common in AA. So I had a really hard time with God, really hard time with God. And by the time I was doing my steps with Carol, I was atheist. I'm like, I don't believe, you know. And she had some similar experiences to what I had with the Catholic Church. And she said, you can borrow my God. And I trusted her because I knew that she knew how I felt. I knew that she understood where I was coming from with that. So I was like, all right, I'll try that. And she told me to get down on my knees and to pray out loud and to ask God every morning to keep me sober and to thank him every night for keeping me sober. And I was like, that's weird. And I don't want to do that. You know, and we got on our knees and did the third step prayer together and everything. And but I was afraid because I lived at home still with my grandmother at that time. And I was afraid that my grandmother would think that I became some, like, Jesus freak. And there's nothing wrong with that, but my family, it was just like a weird thing if I just all of a sudden, you know. This is just how my head went, you know. This is just, our alcoholism comes up with all kinds of stuff to, like, get us to not do what we need to be doing. And so I was afraid she might see me praying on my knees and hear me, I don't know. So I started praying in the bathroom, you know, and the first time I got on my knees, I said, okay, God, I don't know what you are, who you are, you know, what this is all about, but I'm just going to try this. That was another turning point. You know, I was willing. I was just, you know, that door willingness. It just opened that door just a little bit. And that was another turning point in my sobriety and when things started to really change. And I'm just so grateful for all the direction that Carol gave me, because everything along the way helped to change me and transform me so that I don't have to drink today and I can show up for my life today. And so I was going to junior college at the time, and I had a lot of time. I had a lot of time to, like, go to lots of meetings and get involved. And my friend Derek and I got involved in Young People's, and we were on the bid committee after the 94 ACCUPA, and we did a lot of events and stuff, and ran around and went to a lot of different meetings. And my sponsor had me going through the steps, and I started, you know, doing my fourth step and my fifth step, and I wanted to, I wasn't really afraid of the fourth step because I had been in therapy for years. So I felt like I really had told somebody everything. My fear was that my sponsor wasn't a professional, so she might not understand, like, my, like, craziness. And what I was really afraid of was that she was going to, I literally thought this, that I was going to go to her house and read my fifth step, and she was going to call a mental hospital and have somebody come get me. Like, I really, really thought that like, was going to happen. And she just, you know, and she was, like, writing down stuff, you know, taking notes as I'm reading. And, you know, and along the way, at some point, she was like, yeah, I've heard stuff like this before. Like, whatever, you know, like, nothing, you know, fazed her. And I made it out of the house without an ambulance being called from the mental hospital. So, I had all kinds of weird fears. I had a lot of really bad anxiety for a lot of years, and it would come and go, and I had some really bad bouts of it in sobriety. And there was a period of time when I had horrible panic attacks, but the safest place that I felt was in an AA meeting. So I went to lots and lots of meetings, and I was good when I was in the meeting. And at that time, I started to pray. That's when I really got disciplined about praying. And it was out of that anxiety, out of, like, a really bad time in my life, that something really good, really good came. And I still have that discipline today. And I believe that it helps me. I really, really believe that it helps me to stay sober every day. Even if I'm rushing through my prayers in the morning and rushing through them at night, just the act of continuing to do that changes my sobriety. It does something for me just to continually do that, you know. And I think that over time, that practice changes us in ways that we wouldn't have even expected. And so then, you know, and so I'm sober and things are going well and I'm starting to have fun, and my sponsor made me, like, hang out with women, and I was like, all right. So she's like, call 3 women a day, and I'm like, what am I going to say? And she's like, oh, don't worry. They'll talk about themselves. It's fine, you know. And, like, everybody else was doing this. So they knew. Like, everybody in my home group was doing the same stuff. So, you know, I call up Mabel, and Mabel knows that my sponsor is making me call her, you know. And like, I call, you know, and I just, and it just kind of went like that. And it got comfortable. And we can't, I don't know, like, I can't get comfortable with anything unless I practice it, you know. So I've learned that over the years, and I know that, like, I'm not going to walk through fear unless I walk through fear. I'm not going to get to the other side of it unless I walk through it. And later on, I ended up, you know, I was going to college and I wanted to transfer. And like I said, like, my dream my whole life since I was, like, second grade, I don't know, was to go to Berkeley. And so, like, I was going to Palomar, and I started to apply to transfer. And I applied to a bunch of UCs, and I got into all of them except for Berkeley. And, you know, like, by then I was about 6 or 7 years sober. And I had been in this program long enough, and I had worked the steps long enough to know that that was just not God's plan for me. So, like, I didn't have to drink over that, you know? Like, that's like a miracle. Like, I didn't have to drink. I didn't have to be devastated by that. I knew that God had something else for me to do. And I ended up going to UCSD instead and staying home and staying close to my home group and close to my sponsor and all of my other support group. And it was perfect. It was amazing. And I got to do things and have experiences that I wouldn't have had anywhere else. I ended up becoming a geologist. So I wanted to major in physics when I went to UCSD, which is crazy. And really hard. So I ended up changing my major to earth sciences, and I'm a geologist now. And along the way, because UCSD is affiliated with Scripps, I got to go, my professors were Scripps professors, and I got to go on research cruises with them, which was, like, just amazing. You know, here I am, like, this person who has these panic attacks, and, like, you know, I went through a period of time in sobriety where I couldn't leave my house. You know, but I just kept in touch with my sponsor. I had a really hard time going to meetings, and I had, you know, I would go to meetings and then I'd have to leave. And, you know, I'm one that, like, I don't believe in getting up during the meeting, you know, unless something major is happening. You know, it's like you get in your seat and you stay in your seat. And I would have to leave the meeting, and it was horrible. Sometimes I couldn't get to the meeting at all. And, you know, but I just kept holding on and, like, holding out hope and faith that someday, like, it would get better. And, you know, as long as I'm sober, no matter what I've gone through in sobriety, as long as I am sober, I have always had hope that it could be better someday. You know, and like I said in the beginning, the old timers would say in my meeting, like, don't quit before the miracle happens. And that was one little thing that I just always held on to. I don't know why that little cliche just, like, worked for me and worked for my brain. And like, I really believe that, like, a miracle could be just around the corner, you know? Like, I don't want to miss it. Okay, I don't want to miss it, you know? And so I stayed, and I held on, and I, you know, I called people, and I did the best that I could at that time when I was having the panic attacks, and I got through it, and it got better, and I took direction, and I got outside help, and I did all of that stuff. And it got better, and I got to go to college, and I got to graduate, and I got to have all these experiences, and I got to travel, and you know, and I've gotten to stay sober, and I've had the opportunity to sponsor people, and, you know, to be a part of a lot of people's lives in the program, and just to have this whole family of sobriety that is just incredible. You know, we have a really, really tight fellowship up in North County where I go to meetings, and, you know, I have people that I see on a regular basis that I've known for over 20 years that still regularly go to meetings, that I know, like, I can go to a meeting, I can show up, and they're going to be there, and that just has always given me comfort. You know, there are certain people that you know are just always going to be there, whether you even talk to them or not. You just know you're going to see them across the room, and you know, today I get to be one of those people. You know, I've been sober for 27 years, and I am always in my seat in my home group on Tuesday nights. It's the Came to Believe group up in Vista, and we sit on the wall. All the girls sit on the wall. We have our spot, you know, and I'm always there, you know. And if that's my service for that day, you know, if that's the best that I can do is just show up to my meeting on time and just be in my seat. Sometimes that's all, you know, that's the 12-step work that I can do that day, you know. But I was taught to do a lot of other things. You know, my sponsor, this is like in 1994 when I got Carol as my sponsor, and in 95 we had the International Convention here in San Diego. And I'm terrified of people, right? And so she has me go and be a greeter at the International Convention, you know, and, like, I'm, like, greeting at, like, a huge meeting, and I have to, you know. And it's like those little things. I still greet at my home group today because I learned to love it. I used to greet at La Jolla Speakers Meeting when I was in college, and, you know, I was terrified of people still. I was having panic attacks, and I just, you know, it's taking those actions and doing those little things that have that helped me to grow and have changed my sobriety and changed it in a way that, like, if I was just, like, the same person I was when I walked in here, I wouldn't have been able to stay sober. You know, I was not happy with the life that I was living and with the person that I was. And AA has literally opened up the world to me, and I've gotten to do so many. Sorry, I'm just checking the time. You know, just so many things have happened in my life that there's no way that they would have been able to happen. So if I hadn't been sober, I don't believe that I would have graduated from high school if I hadn't gotten sober in my senior year of high school. I don't think I would have been able to make it out of high school. And, you know, junior college was a long haul because of all the anxiety stuff and just trying to, like, get it together. But, you know, I got to graduate from UCSD and I got to have my first job, my first, like, grown-up job with, like, you know, like, benefits and things, you know, and like, it's just stuff like that, that like, when I was new, like, I just didn't know, like, how any of that was going to ever be possible for me, you know. And people like me, like where I come from and like the stuff that I went through, you know, my childhood and then, you know, getting sober. And like, if I hadn't gotten sober, like I just, like, people like me just don't get to do the things that I've gotten to do. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, I've had some friends we all kind of got sober young. There was like kind of like a 5-year period of time where, you know, there were a lot of young people coming in and some of us stayed sober and some of us didn't, you know, and a lot of us getting sober young, like, we struggle in the beginning, like, are we really alcoholic? Is it just like being kids, whatever? Like, I am very, very clear today that I am alcoholic and that I have an alcoholic mind, and that if I were to pick up a drink today, I would go right back to where I had been. I have friends that had gone out and, you know, in, like, after a couple of years, 4 or 5 years of sobriety, and some of them have not made it back. And thanks. Some of them have not made it back. And when I see, you know, when we talk and, we talk about what they've been through, and you know, and I know that their story was just like mine, you know, in the beginning when we first got sober, and then seeing like the progression of the disease over their, you know, over the last 20 years that we've known each other. It's like, I know there's no doubt in my mind that because we were so much alike and our stories were so similar that I would be right there too, you know. And so I'm so grateful that I get to stay here and I get to be here and I get to evolve and see all of things like that, and I don't have to go out and do it myself, you know. And you know, I really attribute that to strong sponsorship, the direction that I was given all along the way. I've changed sponsors a few times over the years, and my sponsor now is Karen. Up in Carlsbad, and she's just great for me. Every stage of my life, I've had people that have been put in my life for, you know, for a reason. And it's always, you know, the longer I stay sober and the more I'm in the steps, I feel like we become more open to God's plan and God's path, and then we are more open to the people coming into our lives. And the people who have been put in my path are exactly what I need at that moment. And the things that are put in front of me to do are exactly what I need at that moment. I've had a long career as a geologist, and I've worked for a lot of different companies, and I recently started my own company back up, which I had before, but so I do environmental consulting. And, you know, because of AA, like, we were talking about this before the meeting too, like, there's like this, like, up and down, you know, when you own your own business, and like, there's the principles of the program have taught me not to be afraid and not to live in fear of financial insecurity. You know, I've had to do work in that area over the years. I got married in sobriety when I was about, what was I, 10, 11 years sober, I think. And my husband's in the program too. So we have a sober home, and we have a son, and he's 12. Like I said earlier, yeah, he's the same age I was when I started drinking. But you know, we have a sober home today, and he goes to a lot of meetings, and he sponsors people, and I sponsor people, and we have that. We understand that. We speak the same language. You know, I'm really so grateful for that today. And we actually were introduced by my friend Derek, who was the one who helped me, you know, get my first sponsor and all of that, and who was with me along the way, you know, and he's still like a brother to me today. So I just am, you know, I hope that what you've got tonight, if you're new, is that Alcoholics Anonymous is the absolute biggest miracle that has ever happened for me. And I just love AA so much. And I just get really grateful to get to share my experience, because it reminds me of where I came from, and it reminds me of everything that I get to have in my life today. And if you're new tonight, I hope that you get this. And, you know, if you're, like Jen said, if you're not having fun in the meetings, just try some different meetings, you know, try to mix it up a little bit, meet some new people, but just keep trying, just keep moving forward, and just keep doing, you know, just keep trying different things until something clicks. And, you know, and I just think that, like, prayer and all of that has just been such a huge part of my sobriety, and it has helped me just to become open, you know, to what I need to be doing. And so I'm really, really grateful to be here tonight. Thank you, Sam, so much. And I think I'm all done. Thank you so much.